In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Best of the rest of what I do. What I do best isn't very nice.
The Comic Culture Radio Show. Chris Owen, Walter DeRiley.
Excelsior!
Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. Hear the lamentation of the women.
Hey, welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show, the champions, the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I am Walter DeRiley, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your nightmares on Elm Street.
Scaring the crap out of the world of comic books.
Indeed. Indeed we are.
Indeed we are.
Chris, you know, I was listening to that intro.
Yeah.
And it came to me that, you know, we're probably the best there is at what we do, too.
Absolutely.
And we've probably been told that it's not very nice, though. I have been a few times,
true.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Very good point. If only we could figure out what it is we do, I'd have a better feeling about being the best at it.
Yeah, you know what? It's a good point. It's one of those philosophical dilemmas.
Yeah, exactly.
I have no idea what I'm talking about. So
we'll have to talk about it later.
Let's move on to another subject. I have no idea what we're talking about.
That's comic books.
And that is comic books, Chris. Let's. Back it up.
Happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Happy Thanksgiving to you,
too.
Oh,
thank you.
We have to mention that we have a special guest.
Oh, right. Yes. Right. Yes. Today we have the executive producer of the new Night of the Living Dead live play that's going to be, playing. Yeah. It's going to be live in Toronto in, I think they're like April or May. Mr. Martin Berthelmer is here with us live in the studio. Marty, how are you today?
That was a big struggle and a half you had there, Chris.
Hey,
but thanks.
I was building you up.
The effort was there. Kudos.
Just trying to help you out here, Marty.
And I'm doing great. Thanks, Chris. How about you guys?
We are great.
We're doing fine. So, Marty, you're excited about this. We'll later in the show, we'll talk a little bit more about Night of the Living Dead, but obviously you're pumped, stoked about your involvement in this project.
Oh, absolutely. It's very exciting. Well, Chris, you know, not that you were wrong. You know, I don't want to say you're wrong.
Oh.
But you left out just, we do try, and the title actually has George A. Romero's Night of
the
Living Dead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
Because,
sorry.
You know what, just, you know, as the first point of the show, this is the actual first official stage adaptation. There have been others. I think there's even a couple going on right now in the Chicago area.
Oh, I didn't know that.
People put them on all the time. There was a copyright issue back in the day, in 1968 when the movie came out. So people kind of take liberties at putting on their own adaptation. But this is the actual first official, backed by George A. Romero, plus Russ Streiner and John Rousseau, the other creative team behind the entire original movie.
You're only on the show here for half the show, eh? Let's wait for the other half.
But I thought that's a very important point.
No, it's a good
George
point.
George Romero actually, he doesn't stamp his name on a lot of things.
What Chris is trying to say, this is the real, what Chris, sorry, that's Marty, right?
Yeah, that's Marty.
I'm getting confused.
You can call me Chris if you like.
This is the real deal.
Absolutely.
This is, you know, not some sort of fake knockoff.
No, no. You're not going to find this at Marshall's or, you know,
no.
at
or some
Winners
room
or some
in,
back room.
Lower Manhattan.
No, that's right, in Soho. No. Yeah. This is the real thing.
This is the coach.
This is the Louis Vuitton of the acting world
the
in zombies.
This is the Gookie.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
With lots of zombies. You're right. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well. Okay, well, before we talk to you more about zombies and the play, we have to talk about our usual stuff. We have to talk about
the important things.
Important things. We have to talk
about things that pay the bills first.
Right. That's okay. Right. No problem.
So the first things we're going to do is we're going to delve into New This Week. And New This Week is brought to you by horror comic books full of gore, violence, and terror. Visit your local shop today and make sure to pick up some for the kids.
Mm. Great idea.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Chris, what have you picked this week?
Okay, well, here we go. So, what do you want to start with? DC, Marvel?
Can I pick?
Sure.
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Let's go with DC.
DC, okay. Well, this one, I decided to go with Batman number 13, Death of the Family. And this is a stunning looking book. This is
stunningly looking.
Just hold on a second. I know you got your greedy hands out there. Just hold on one second. I have to describe it here a little bit. It's by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, and this one, it has the Joker has returned, and I took a quick look through it, and it is terrifying. It is, you know what? It is
scary.
It is scary. It is perfect for the Halloween theme. You know what? It is a return to the Joker that it reminded me of the Joker from like Arkham Asylum, Grant Morrison kind of thing. It, like really crazy, really
crazy-ass Joker.
Yeah, crazy. Oh, yeah. I don't want to give too much away.
Don't.
Okay, I don't want to say too much, but man, it's scary looking.
Right.
Very scary looking.
I love the die cut cover.
Yeah, and that was the other thing I wanted to talk about. That was another reason why we chose this one. So it's got a die cut cover. Now, for those of you who don't know what a die cut cover is, it's got an extra cardstock kind of cover on the top, and it's got kind of like the half face of the Joker, and it's got the eye cut out and everything. And when you flip it open, it actually has Batman's face underneath. So it's almost like the two are always meant to be intertwined as, you know, always constantly fighting chaos over, you know,
order.
Order. Hmm, exactly.
That's an interesting thing, just because I happened to look at it, and, you know, you're talking about how it's scary and everything. I looked at the front. I thought it was like one of those stenciling cover you do the loops and the rings. And
yeah,
it's, I thought it was more like a coloring book, so I didn't think it was that scary.
No, I thought it was very scary.
I was deceived. Okay.
You know what? They kind of missed the boat, though, because if you look at the back part of the cover, they could have, if they had continued it on, they could have made it a mask.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah,
If the back part is just sort of a nothing, but if they had done the whole thing.
They perhaps felt that Death of the Family, which of course is a play on the old Death in the family.
Yes. That's where Robin died.
Right. They've got the whole, what would you call this, schedule of releases for it's an epic event, Chris.
Right. So if you want to get all the issues, here's a guide.
Checklist.
Checklist, yeah. Hey. Need him, got him.
All right, read them. All right, this is cool. All right, so Batman.
The only other thing I'm going to say is this kind of is a throwback to the 90s comics where it had die-cut covers.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah. Well, let's hope people are buying them to read them.
Exactly.
And not to put them away. Yeah. All right, listen, this looks cool. Batman, Death of the Family.
Yeah.
Sorry, Batman number 13, Death of the Family.
Yes, okay. Next up on the block.
Chris, of course, this is available at your local comic book shop.
Yes. It just came out today. Next up on the block, we have the new Avengers Avengers number one now. Avengers Now. Sorry, took me a while. Marvel Now, Avengers number one. Took me a minute to get that all out.
I'm glad you got a clear... Well, you got a handle on things, Chris.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'm just flipping through it, and man, does this look good? Hold on, I'm going to get the exact. It is Uncanny Avengers number one. That's what I wanted to say. Uncanny Avengers number one.
I'm intimidating, aren't I, Chris?
Yes, you really are, Marty.
See, we got an important guest, a special guest on this week, and you're flubbing your lines.
Kerfuffling your lines.
That's right.
So, anyways, Uncanny Avengers number one. And you know what? It looks awesome. It's got a great story to it. It's got characters that you would not have expected appear in this comic.
Yeah, this is quite
exciting. I don't want to give it away.
No, don't give it away. But you and I were surprised at the last...
The surprise ending.
Surprise ending.
Yeah.
Quite dramatic.
Sure. Yeah. As I said, I can't give it away.
Don't give it away.
I did not expect it at all. There's even some minor villains show up that I don't want to say again, but I wasn't expecting that. Yeah, great story, great read, great art by John Cassidy, and the stories by Rick Remender.
Let's not cross streams here.
Listen, Chris, it's a very exciting Wednesday to head into your local comic book shop.
It is.
You got this Avengers Now.
Yep.
You got this Batman 13 die cut.
Yes.
You know, just those two reasons alone, there should be literally
half the town going into the
shops.
This is the first of the new Marvel Now is coming out.
Yeah.
This is the first number one. Of course, in the next few weeks, more Marvel Nows will be coming out.
Right.
And you know what? This is a great time for those of you that are always intimidated to start buying a new book, and it does happen all the time because you know what? You go to the comic book store and it's at issue 10 or it's at issue 30 or even worse, like, you know, Spider-Man is at issue 700, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of a sudden now you can go in, you can pick up an Uncanny Avengers number one and it's the jumping on point, and you might not know all the characters yet because they are older characters, but you know what? It's a great point to jump on and you will get to know the characters.
Excellent. All right. Well, check that out at your local comic book shop today.
All right, so second to last, we've got, knowing that Marty was on the show today, I, of course, had to choose a zombie-style book, and what better book to choose than Walking Dead Michonne Special, number
Chris,
one.
There is no better zombie book to pick than Walking Dead.
That's what I thought. You know what? Here, Marty,
well,
I'm thinking
that's
about
only
you.
Because they don't have a Night of the Living Dead zombie book.
Yeah, and
you know, no comic version.
You should
they have existed.
Just talk to Ricky Romero there and find out what's going on.
Yeah, I'll tell Ricky right away there.
By the way, Night of the Living Dead comics have existed, by the way.
But right now, like, there's nothing I can read right now and come into this wonderful comic book store that Walter's affiliated with.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right now, there's no Night of the Living Dead comics. So, Walking Dead is probably where it's at.
I'll talk to Ricky soon. Don't worry. Right. We'll get this going.
Get right. Ricky going on that.
So, Chris, Michonne, of course, who first appeared in Walking Dead number 19.
Right.
And I believe, how did this work? Now, hearken back if you can.
Hearken.
I think she was shown in a clip from in last year. She was introduced
in the TV series.
In the TV series,
yes. So she appeared in the very last episode,
right?
And just sort of like a silhouette kind of thing. You don't even really get
silhouette.
To know who she is. Oh. So she was like the big, like, what's going to happen? Yeah. Where is she coming from? And I'm wondering if this is meant to be some sort of tie-in. I mean, you know, because I think this is meant obviously more for the comic book readers than it is for the TV guys.
Yeah.
But I think it's great that they're sort of tying it in. That it's coming out now, and the Walking Dead series is going to be coming out soon again in the next little while. Actually,
and I think that is just a couple weeks away.
I think if it's not next Sunday, it's the Sunday after. It's pretty close. Yeah.
The crazy business about that is once that episode aired within a week, that Walking Dead 19, it was selling for, I don't know, $20 on eBay. It was going for $500.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Asininely stupid. Like
which I still think it's hilarious that characters in the Walking Dead comics, I mean, I guess there's no reason why they can't be special, but they're just regular people, and now they're sort of becoming, they're not superheroes, but people are calling them, well, this is their origin story, and this is their, you know, their first appearance.
Right.
And it's like, well, it's just Rick. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's hard for me to get over
the
fact.
Yeah, you know, Rick?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. All right, Walking Dead, Michonne Special number one at your local comic book shop today.
All right. Now, I know you are a fan of SpongeBob.
Oh.
Yeah. And normally, you know what? I don't always choose SpongeBob, you know, we have talked about it on the show before, but man, you know what? I thought this was just too cool to pass up. So SpongeBob Comics, it's a special Halloween edition, but not only is it a Halloween edition, it has guest artists like Al Jaffe, who was a big Mad Magazine artist. Mm-hmm. Remember, he used to do the the fold-ins?
Oh, yeah.
Steven Bissett, who drew Swamp Thing for I don't know how long.
Yep.
And Tony Millionaire, who did Sock Monkey.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So you've got this myriad of different types of art styles coming out at you, all for SpongeBob. It's even got James Kolchaka in it. And it's just like, it's just too cool. It's just too cool not to talk about. I had to mention it on the air.
Awesome. SpongeBob Comics, a haunted 13th issue. You notice, though, that Batman was at the 13th issue, too.
That's right. So, maybe it's cool. Tie-in.
My favorite artist for SpongeBob. See, I have an easy barometer for a good artist for SpongeBob.
Okay.
Whoever can draw Patrick to look stupidest is my favorite SpongeBob artist.
Right.
So that's key for me. Patrick's got to look really, really dumb.
Yeah.
And these guys are doing a great job of this already.
It's a great read. You know what? I love when Steven Bissett draws sort of like this weird looking, realistic style SpongeBob kind of thing. I don't know. I just can't describe it. It's just too cool.
Awesome. All right. Listen, SpongeBob comic number 13 at your local comic book shop today. Pick it up. It's Halloween themed.
All right. Well, we're going to go to a musical interlude here. And because it is a bit of a Halloween theme, how about we do a little bit of the old Meet the Creeper?
Grace.
Oh, Grace. Oh, I love the music you put on, Grace.
Ah, Chris. Who the heck was that, Chris?
That was Rob Zombie.
You know what? That is a good Halloween tune.
And it's a certain kind of mix. It's called the Pink Something. I can't say what the word is because I'm not allowed to say it on the air.
Right.
It's called the Pink Something mix.
Like you just can't pronounce it? Like we can help you sound it
out. No, I can't. I'm not allowed
right.
to say it.
Don't go there, Chris. It's family entertainment. You know, Marty, we've helped CFMU McMaster Radio win the Hamilton Radio Station of the Year through clean content.
Absolutely. Okay? Yeah. I guess I could say it's the Pink Cat mix.
Pink Cat mix. Yes. Mix. Yes. Oh, right on. All right, listen. This brings us to the comic culture mailbag, which is brought to you by the sexy superhero costumes. Halloween right around the corner. Don't you want to catch the eye of that certain She-Hulk or Superman? Visit your local comic book shop today.
Well, you couldn't have read that any better.
That was my mix of Buster Brooks and Christopher Walken reading.
Catch
that.
The
like
eye of a certain She-Hulk or Superman?
Listen, good news there is, hey, head into your local comic shop. They might have Halloween costumes now. Comic shops are starting to stock them now.
I heard there's a really good one in Hamilton that has some good costumes.
I was trying to disguise that plug, but you were on to me.
Oh, boy. All right.
Listen.
We've got Comic Culture Mailbag.
All right. Why don't you read it so I don't muff it up?
Well, all right. Okay. Dear Walt and Chris, I've heard that comic conventions can be a real party. I'm going to the New York Comic Con this week. Do you have any tips for me on how to party like a rock star? This is from Jane from Omaha, Nebraska.
Well, Jane, you don't go out there punching cows in the middle of the night when you're...
No cow tipping,
all right? This is New York City, so yeah, there's some hot spots. You know what you got to do? Go to Artist Alley.
Yeah.
Those young, hard-up, horny young artists, they're going to know all the cool spots. They're going to go out. They're going to party. There's always going to be some sort of after-con party.
Yes.
And you just have to kind of... you know what you do? How do you do it, Chris? You kind of go up. You look at the guy, right? You look at the guy. You got that guy ain't going out,
right?
Well, then that guy might be going out,
right? Yeah.
You just approach him and ask him. Hey.
There are many ways of doing it. One of the ways.
Which way worked for you, Chris?
many different ways.
Oh,
I've gone to a lot of. I've somehow muzzled my way into different after parties and things like that. And there's different ways of doing it. All you can do is, first of all, there's the. The hotel where everybody's staying at. Go to the bar. Just go to the bar, and usually everybody's hanging out at the bar.
Right.
That's one way. Another way is to just talk to them and find out, as you said, hey, what's going on tonight? What are you guys up to? And then somebody might say, well, there's a poker game going on in the X room or whatever, and then you just go hang out at the poker room for a little while, then usually there's a party. Everybody kind of leaves there and goes to the party.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of different ways of going around about doing it. Certainly, if you can somehow get a badge, and then find out. That's the big thing. Get a badge. Steal, beg, borrow a badge off of somebody. Because that'll let you into most of the parties where there's sort of an exclusivity involved.
Right on. So like an artist badge is what you're saying?
Well, yeah. Any kind of an artist badge of some sort. And anything that has you as certified as a guest.
A dealer? But not a dealer badge.
Artist badges are better. Dealer badges will work.
So Chris and I are pretty savvy at this kind of stuff, Jane. So this is what you do. The secret is out. The secret is that these artists, they will always get a couple of extra badges.
Yes.
So that artist has a couple of badges that he's not using, right? Or she's not using.
That's right.
Right? So what happens is they get, Joe Artist, but then they get guest of Joe Artist.
That's right.
Guest of Joe Artist because maybe they needed somebody to carry in their portfolio or somebody to watch the booth while they go pee or something like that. You know what I mean? Right? So they get a couple extra badges. So don't believe him then when he says or she says,
I can't get you in.
I can't get you in. I don't have a badge. Be persistent.
Yeah. They're lying.
Say, I got to go to this party, man.
Yeah.
Right? No?
Absolutely. And as I said, sometimes the dealers throw on the parties, like our good friend Harley Yee has been known to put on a lot of different poker tournaments.
Poker nights,
right? And artists and those types.
How do you think he got amassed that big collection of comics
exactly,
he has?
Exactly. Yeah. He won in the poker game.
That kid's a shark. I'm telling you.
But honestly, you know what? And I hate to say it, but some of the best pieces of artwork that I own came from those parties. You know, coming to the after party and hanging out at the bar. The artists just love to draw whatever, right? They're always drawing, always doodling on napkins and stuff like that. Yeah. I got to say that is a great way of getting some artwork as well.
So there's like Neil Adams in the corner, just stone drunk.
Yeah.
And it's like you're going over, hey, Neil.
Hey, Neil.
Well, you draw me a Batman. Ah, I gotta wait for you, kid.
Hey, Neil, remember Continuity Comics? Whatever happened with that?
Right, yeah.
Then I get a punch in the face.
That's right. Yeah. And the left starts swinging. All right, so Jane, just go in there. Be aggressive, okay? Go to the artist alley. They're going to set you up with really good parties.
All right, sounds good.
You guys seem to know a lot. Like, if I were to guess, you were talking about you go in, you see the artists who you know who are going to party, which ones... You guys seem to know a lot. I would have figured you guys were the guys doing crossword puzzles in bed at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, after. We have that demeanor to us, don't we, Mark?
Shocking.
I know you know better than that. You're just saying stuff.
Yeah, I've been roped into an event or two.
Yeah,
with
that's
you.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm aware.
And with us.
I'm very aware. Yeah,
that's right.
All right. He called your bluff, Mark.
He called your bluff.
Yeah,
all right. Listen, let's keep this thing moving. Let's go into
Let's do top 300.
Yeah. No, why don't you read the industry news announcer?
Because
we do want to get paid.
Yes.
I know this next sponsor will pay.
You know what? Why don't you just say this one?
All right. You want to risk it?
Yeah.
All right. Industry news is brought to you by Night of the Living Dead. Ricky Romero's Night of the Living Dead Live, coming spring 2013.
Did I say that right? I love that Ricky Romero. He does great work.
I guess we have a little bit more competition than we thought out there.
Let me try this. Industry News is brought to you by George Romero's Night of the Living Dead, coming spring 2013.
George Romero's Night of the Living Dead Live.
Live.
You even muffed it up.
Oh, you know what?
Do you want me to write it out in text?
Would you mind?
If I print it out for you?
That would probably be way better. Right. Anyways.
There's lots of time
for that. We're expecting a check from you soon, Marty.
Let's keep it moving. Chris, let's talk really quickly because we want to get to Marty and talk about...
what's going on?
What's his name? Romero's... I'll just stick to
Sounds like you don't really want to talk about it.
Night of the Living Dead Live later in the show. Let's talk about quickly about the month that was September in the comic book industry. At your local comic book shops, you know, those poor souls, they try to sell you their comics that they get in every month. And it seems September was another banner month. I'm not going to say it was the same as September from a year ago. Comic sales were actually down a bit, 4.4%. But overall, including comics and graphic novels, sales were up just a percentage point. Well, I think that is a victory considering the massive month that last September had. Because if you remember, last September was the release of all the new DCs.
Absolutely. You know what? I thought the fact that although there's a bit of a dip in September, I still think that the things are going very well with comics, and I think that part of that is because of the movies and like the Avengers movie that came out earlier in the year. I think people are becoming a little bit more interested in comics in general.
Yeah, it was a huge summer for comic book movies.
Yeah, Batman did great. Spider-Man, I think, did great, right?
The people that saw it actually were that I'm aware of, all the people that I know who saw it, they were actually very impressed. I guess they kind of changed the aspect of the direction of it and everything. And he is you would know better than I, Walter. He's still a huge selling comic.
Oh, absolutely,
property,
yes. Spidey's it still.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay, but here's the thing. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to interrupt or anything here, but Batman clearly, if we looked at the figures for September, Batman clearly was one of the biggest draws, right? With four different titles.
Batman was huge. If you look at the top ten, Batman has five of the top 10 selling comics in the month of September. Nine of the top 10, from 2 to 10, are actually all from that DC Zero thing.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and then Batman was five of those nine.
Wow.
You had Batman Inc., you had Batman and Robin, Batman Dark Knight, you had Detective, and then you had Batman proper, right?
Yeah.
So, DC is heavily, heavily dependent on the Cape Crusader.
Well, yeah, so basically without Batman, where would DC be? Would they still be doing as well?
Nowhere near, obviously. You know, like, nowhere near.
Because, Superman, other than Action Comics, Superman is nowhere to be seen.
Right.
And you'd think that Superman or some sort of spinoff of Superman would be in there.
Yeah, well, you and I have talked about this before. Superman is he's almost like a heritage piece. He's almost like a certain reverence, I guess. There's a certain respect paid to Superman.
Yeah.
But in terms of the fan base right now in comics, give them a Wolverine story. Give them a Batman story.
You're
you know, they're, it's hard to sell Superman. It's really, really hard to sell Superman.
You're absolutely right. So, yeah, I agree.
All right. Graphic novels. Interesting here is that Thanos Quest number one. This is great because Thanos Quest number – first of all, Thanos Quest, isn't that
Quest
like 1,000 years old?
Yeah, that came out like early 90s, right? And it was a great story, and it was a prelude to the Infinity Gauntlet. It was sort of, you know, of course, Thanos first appeared in Iron Man 55, right? But nobody gave two craps about him for a long, long time.
Sure.
And then Jim Starlin comes out, and he writes this story called ThanoQuest, which even then nobody gave two craps about.
Right.
Remember, it was because it was one of these prestige format comics that was like $5, right?
Mm-hmm.
And back in the early 90s, nobody wanted to pay that kind
of money.
Paying
a buck for a comic back then.
Right, so, you know.
What
so
the heck?
So nobody's buying that kind of stuff.
What
and then,
the heck?
And then all of a sudden Infinity Gauntlet comes out. And it becomes like, because that was the prelude to it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, now it was like this big, you know, honking book, and it was explained a lot about who Thanos was. And now, because Thanos has an appearance in the Avengers movie as a cameo, I should say, they decided to go back and reprint the Thanos Quest.
Well, that's
as a graphic
the
novel.
Stupidity of the whole thing. So Thanos appears in what? All of 7 seconds of film.
Yeah.
Doesn't say a word.
No, he just smiles.
He's at the back of
the theater.
3 minutes of credits that you have to sit through.
Right.
Bored, falling asleep.
Right, right.
Honey, wake me up when the, you know. And then, and now that little thing.
Yeah.
This is how the insanity of it all, Chris. Insane.
Yeah.
That little thing propels this obscure little 30-year-old book into the number one graphic novel for the month.
That's
How
crazy.
How stupid is that?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Pretty stupid.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid.
Well, think about what you were saying earlier about The Walking Dead and, you know, random people, human people making an appearance in the end of an episode of TV, and then all of a sudden the comic book price skyrocketed.
Yeah, but it's part and parcel to the same thing. You know,
I think it's just an emotional market.
A profile of, what's her name?
Michonne.
I was going to say, yeah, okay. Michonne, just drives the market into a frenzy. The speculators probably more than anybody else, but this isn't speculators though, Chris. This is thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people that are now interested in the Thanos thing. Right?
Yep.
And they're going to their local bookstores or something like that, and there are comic book shops.
Don't,
anyway,
don't get me wrong. I think it's great.
Stuff.
I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome. You know what? I read the comic years ago, and I was tempted to buy the graphic novel myself, even though I already read it once.
Right on.
So you know what? Yeah, I think it's a good thing.
All right. Let's move on.
Let's move on. All right. We got okay, this is interesting. I know a few times you've mentioned on the air that you are a fan of the Sunday strips
of
comics. So you're obviously familiar with Charlie Brown and the Peanuts Gang by creator Charles Schulz.
Love them.
Well, now guess what? Charles Schulz and his estate the estate of Charles Schulz, I should say, they're going to commemorate the 65th anniversary of the debut of the Peanuts comic strip and the 50th anniversary of A Charlie Brown Christmas with a new Charlie Brown movie coming out November 25th, 2015. This is, of course, going to be produced by the same guys that have done the, the Ice Age movies.
Oh, wow.
And I think there was another company. Hold on a second here. I don't see it. And the same guy that co-directed Horton Hears a Who. The Dr. Seuss?
Right, okay.
Horton Hears a Who.
Right.
So it's going to be a tremendously huge project.
This is going to be a big thing. This is, you know what? This is a very big, big, big deal because well, I think especially because of the anniversaries involved, right? Because it's the 65th anniversary of the cartoon, the comic strip, and the 50th anniversary of the Christmas special.
Right. And you know what? Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. Okay. Obviously, there could be others. But I know that Charlie Brown, the old classic Peanuts, are reprinted on a daily basis in
yes,
like a million newspapers or anything. Yeah. So these are ones from the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yeah,
right?
I think they're. I don't know how they're choosing which ones to reprint.
Right.
I don't. For some reason, I don't think they're reprinting the early ones. I think there's a time period from about the 70s or from the 80s that they're reprinting those ones. Because if you look at there's a different style from the early ones to the ones that they ended up with like as a regular style. And I don't think they ever reprint those early ones.
They're just not relevant in today's sort
of
times.
I think because it doesn't have that same Charlie Brown look. It's the same characters, but it doesn't have the same kind of look as everybody's used to. And I think
sort of like the early Archies.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, right. It took
Mr. Schultz a while to refine the look.
Exactly, just
like
it took Dan DiCarlo to refine Archie kind of thing. Right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the way the Snoopy-Doo looks, it took a while. Snoopy-Doo.
Mixing properties.
Re-Woogstock. Snoopy-Dooby-Doo.
I meant Snoopy. All right. Ooh, that was a boo-boo.
Hey, boo-boo.
Hey, boo-boo.
Hey, boo-boo.
Hey, Re-Woogstock. Dumber than your average host. All right.
Anyways, I think it's great because you know what? There have been plays. Speaking of plays, there's been musicals, there's been TV shows, but there's yet to be a really good movie come out about Charlie Brown and the Peanuts.
It's about time,
Devin. But they did. Well, they did do like A Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, or all these kind of like Sunday kind of ones, but nothing big in the theaters.
All right, listen, Chris. Here's something to. This is probably going to depress you a little bit. Video game sales, Chris, year over year down 20%.
I'm depressed, too. I could be depressed, too, here.
You're a gamer, too, aren't you, Mark?
Oh, I love the video games.
Right. You know what? Here's the thing.
Is there a Night of the Living Dead live video game?
Well, there should be. Let me get on it.
All right.
Just add it to the list of Ricky Romero's things to do.
Get Ricky on that.
So, yeah, you know what? Video games, I can understand why. Because you know what? Video games... Here's the thing. So you go out, you buy your system for $300.
$300
at least.
I was gonna say what on the cheaper end, maybe a few years Atari. After it came out. Though.
Yes, what I mean. Okay, not in a brand new one. You're looking at $600.
Yeah.
Right. So you go out and you buy your video game system for anywhere between $300 to $600, mm-hmm. and then if you want to play any of the popular games that are just brand new, you're looking at $60 plus.
70
right?
with tax.
Yeah, 70 with tax.
60 to 80, sweet spot.
Yeah. Wow. So now, but now if you own an iPod, or if you own just a regular computer or an iPad or something, well, you can download all these kinds of free games. Or iPod, if you own an iPod, you can play games on the go, and it's all over the place. And even if you have a little iPad, like a little one, there's all kinds of free games on that. So now all of a sudden, video games are becoming more portable. And they're becoming more accessible for a lot lesser cost for something that you already own. People already have an iPhone. People already have an iPad.
Right.
Why would I go out and spend $400, $500 on a game system when I can play video games in my bed and not have to worry about, getting a 40-inch screen TV and paying $50, $60, $70 for a video game after that, right?
Makes sense, Chris. Right. Makes sense.
I actually have a completely different vantage point of this.
What's that?
I actually think, in the past 2-3 years, the online content and the online gaming community has absolutely exploded. Probably about 3 years ago, it became really common for gamers to get a game. And nowadays, you look at, like, the Call of Duties, Skyrims, the games that, honestly, you can log hundreds of hours into one game alone online because it just keeps getting – it stays fresh when you play it online. I know people who will play one game for an entire year straight.
Yeah,
so
that's a good
point.
Fact
the need to buy multiple games is decreasing because of the replayability of a lot of the top games right now.
So
you don't need to buy 8 titles a year. You could buy 2 and probably get hundreds of hours out of just those 2 titles alone.
So your game console, whatever you call it,
yep.
What do you call that thing? You're devoting it just exclusively almost to those 2 games that you like.
Well, I'm saying some people
and
do
then,
that, right?
To get your jollies from the other games, you're downloading them free on your little
they're just
time
wasters while you're waiting
like
at the bus stop or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just to kill time.
A good point. I mean, I know you don't play a lot of video games, but I know your sons like to play, like, say, hockey.
Right.
Right. So people will buy an online hockey game, and they'll play an entire season.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah. No, by 1 year. Yeah, NHL 12, year. NHL 13. Right, right.
But some of these guys, that's all they buy.
KHL 13, yeah.
Because then
sorry.
They can, they can play against other people, too, because now this online ability allows them to play against other people, and now they have like all new realms of hockey playing that they can enter.
So how does the industry combat this? Well, do they shorten the games? Like, do they say, three weeks on that game, you're finished it. You have no other options.
Some games have minimized on the, say, the story content. The actual story mode or story arc might only be 8 to 10 hours of gameplay, but then they'll actually have additional downloadable content and then online
gameplay.
That you
have to pay for.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So they will actually, so again, I'm just using Call of Duty because it's current. Mm-hmm. And I know that they have implemented a system where every month or so they were releasing new map packs and you'd have to purchase them for another $10 or $15.
Oh, so they're addressing the issue as
they
we
are,
speak.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Because they know there are some people that will just play a Call of Duty game until the next one comes out and that's what they'll do, right? And
right.
So, I mean, you don't want to, I mean, talking business, you don't want to take $60 and then sit on that for 2 years or a year until the next one comes out. So you, but at the same time, you are providing them with additional content so that you are getting something each time you pay.
Right, right.
But you know what? There is a good point that now you passed me this article earlier about video games. And it was saying that so culturally speaking, video games have not made that leap yet, right?
Right.
So, you know, and what do I mean by that? I mean, well, they're still accepted by society, but they're still sort of a fringe group. There's no intellectual value added to video games. Right.
Right. They're the guy in your mom's basement type of mentality to
that's
it.
That's the mentality.
Yeah.
It's not, but that's how people
view it. Right, I know, but that's
it.
Just like comics, Chris.
Exactly.
People view, or they used to view as comics as kids' stuff.
Right.
But there's a social acceptance now that perhaps they're not.
Right. So,
right. And you're saying the video games haven't reached that.
They haven't reached that point where, you know, like in this article by Chris Chelentrop says that, you know what, the culture impact is more about the sales. The industry has had plenty of blockbusters, but is still looking for what Art Spiegelman did with Mouse, and that's bringing a broad respect to the medium and that won a Pulitzer Prize for his graphic novel. There's still no broad-spectrum video game out there that has sort of included everyone, right, that has said, hey, you know what, this is something that can affect everyone.
Yeah, good point. Good point. The thing, though, is just I guess the nature of comic books would be just violence, too, but, right? Until somebody came along and did something thought-provoking.
But
right?
You know what? I think the accessibility of video games is becoming greater now with having iPads and iPods and things like that you can just sort of carry around and laptops. Now, I think sooner or later that they will reach a threshold where a video game that is going to have some sort of cultural impact will exist.
All right, excellent. All right, Chris, let's move it along then. Let's talk about The Walking Dead.
Do we want to have a quick musical interlude? We haven't had one in a little while here.
Oh, let's
keep
it
fresh.
All right,
keep it
real.
All right, well, let's stay with Mr. Rob Zombie himself, and this is The Return of the Phantom Stranger.
Yeah, Chris, that was beautiful. That's kind of sounded almost the same as the other one you did.
Well, you know, I have to say Rob Zombie does have kind of
a unique
sound. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, Let's move on and let's talk about let's get into the spirit of it. We're going to start talking to Marty about the Night of the Living Dead live real soon. And I thought this would be a good segue into the
word. Yeah.
Let's talk about this new Walking Dead clip that's hit the internet.
Well, yeah, you know what? Their internets is pretty popular these days, and they're used for, you know, having new releases of clips and things like that. And Walking Dead is no different. Mm-hmm. So Walking Dead, of course, had the huge following after the second season ended. We talked about Michonne making an appearance in the end of the second season. Well, of course, now anything that has to do with the Walking Dead TV series, even just minimal clips, is now making a big story, big scene here. And this almost seems like it should be part of our trailer trash, because really it's just a little clip from a TV show.
Yeah, you're right.
And it seems like it's a big deal here. And
They say that this clip will dictate the direction of much of what happens in season 3. So, this is like a big deal clip.
It is,
type of thing. And news out of Walking Deadsville is that they have signed on for season 4 as well.
You know, I stayed a week in Walking Deadsville. It was terrible.
Yeah, I hear you, buddy. I hear you. Yeah. Listen, I feel like I'm there right now, I'll tell you the truth.
Hey-oh! Leading you up to that one there.
Chris, so great news for Walking Dead. Walking Dead fans, fans,
Here you go. So, it's now Sunday, October 14th. So Sunday. I wasn't too sure if it was this Sunday or the next one. This Sunday, October 14th.
Hey, listen. That is perfect segue into our featured guest for today, Mr. Marty Berth Elmer. Marty, you and I and Chris are going to talk about this crazy concept that you guys have got called, what's it called again?
Crazy. It's not crazy.
What's the official name again?
The official name.
George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead Live.
Right.
Okay.
Cool, right?
Okay. Now.
Very cool.
Night of the Living Dead. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Night of the Living Dead. Is a horror movie, black and white horror movie that came out in the 1960s.
68,
yep. I'm not wrong. So it came out in the 1960s, and basically, I know that there are debates as to whether or not it was the first zombie movie, but it is meant to be the pinnacle of zombie movies as far as starting the genre again.
Absolutely. A lot of people, a lot of other filmmakers, you know, aside from George A. Romero, people that he hasn't even had direct contact with, will always, you know, say that he was pretty much the starting point for the genre. And they take a lot of what the zombie, you know, culture, say the zombie itself, what it is, what it means to be a zombie, actually, from this film.
Right.
He's the Jackie Robinson of zombies. He's the Neil Armstrong of zombies, this guy. Should I go on?
No, please don't.
All right.
Okay, so Night of the Living Dead's this cult classic, fantastic movie from the 1960s. What are you doing with it? I don't get it. So what, you're going to all of a sudden make a play about it? I don't get it.
All of a sudden? No, Chris. it's a long process. So... if we're going to kind of root it in near the beginning there, I'd have to say my production team there. I'm teamed up with Nyctophobia Films, small Hamiltonian-based production company. They are kind of the pioneers here. A couple of years back, the two, I guess you'd say, directors, producers, creators, Phil Pattison and Chris Harrison, they actually came up with the notion of putting such an event, a stage version of The Night of the Living Dead.
Okay. So how does that happen? Like, are you just like having a few pints at the local pub there?
The only play I'd see is one about zombies.
Right.
I took the wife to Stratford yesterday, and some crap about Christopher Plummer, and I fell asleep. You know what we need?
Yeah, just getting wasted, thinking you can do better than what's out there.
You know,
absolutely.
Much ado about nothing is good, but I'll tell you, it's much ado about nothing, and it needs zombies is what
it
needs.
That's right. So is this the way it started, you think, or what?
Oh, you know, I couldn't have explained it better myself.
Right.
All
right.
Surly, drunkenness and all.
Nice.
Right and all. So they actually got together. They talked about it. And you know what? It's actually been a very long process for them. I wasn't with them in the beginning. Teamed up since. I like their direction. They've got the enthusiasm to run this, you know, to the top of the world.
Enthusiasms.
Mm-hmm. And it's a slow work in progress. So what they actually did was... they got George Romero on board, which was huge. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, no other stage adaptation had ever actually... I don't even know if many have approached him. They just go ahead and do it. And
right. You know. Well, but you know what? I can understand why they wouldn't. They probably figured he would never want to be involved in such a like a minor thing, right? Like, they probably view it as something small, whereas he's probably like, hey, you know what? Let's make it a big thing and let's do it right.
Exactly. And they're not really financing a big to-do. It's more like a community theater.
Yeah.
Something like in their spare time, some fanboys do it, which is fine because, I mean, you know, Chris and Phil, biggest diehard, you know, guys, could not have better guys who are in love with what they do.
Right.
Sort of doing this. And so they started with George, and they got in touch with John Russo and Russ Striner, who are very huge in the comic convention circuit. They were at Fan Expo at mm-hmm. the booth and everything. Like, they love this stuff.
So,
they love interacting.
Right. So just for our listening audience, so John Russo is the writer of Night of the Living Dead, correct?
Back in the original, yes.
Yeah, okay. So.
And then actually after that, they kind of split ways. You know, they kind of developed a different zombie each.
Right.
And then, you know, they all came back together for the 1990 remake, and then they haven't worked together since on any one project.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So it's been over 20 years.
But it's like a band reunion.
So yet they're working on this mm-hmm. together.
They went solo zombie.
That's cool.
Career.
That's
yeah.
very.
And then
that's,
they reunited.
That's
it's
kind
of
cool.
like a historical event, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, we're happy to be part of it. And so, like I said, they all signed on board. They all were aware everyone else was on board. So it's not like they tried to avoid working with each other.
Right.
Again,
right.
Okay.
Don't think this is a stupid question, please.
Okay. Now I'm going to.
We will.
Is there, like, singing? Is there music?
This is not a musical. See, this is actually what I was going to get at was what Chris and Phil decided to do was they approached and locked down Christopher Bond, who was the co-director, co-writer of Evil Dead, the musical, which was the highly successful, started in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
and then it's actually touring across the pond. It went through the States,
yeah.
and now back in Toronto, it came back little while ago.
I've heard, I mean, I did not get a chance to go myself, but I've heard nothing but mm-hmm. amazing, not just good, not just great, but amazing things about
Evil Dead
musical.
I think
it's
been
going
around for like 7 years or something like that. Like,
it's been around
crazy.
For a long time
and
now.
So we have
Cats and Evil Dead.
Yeah.
What
is it called?
The musical.
Evil Dead?
Yeah.
Not
Evil Dead, what?
Evil Dead. Yeah.
You could put a cat in it, I guess.
Evil Dead cats.
Zombie cats. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, we have him on board for directing and co-writing. And, you know, we're thrilled to have it. I've sat down with him a few times already. He's a very creative guy, very funny guy.
Yeah.
And it's probably because he stays in touch with a lot of the second city of Toronto
okay,
sort of people.
So hold on. So now, is this show... Now, I know it's very early in its production.
We've kind of come up to the official pre-production phase.
Now,
we are going to begin workshopping in about a month or so.
Now, this is probably a stupid question, but...
No, I do the stupid question.
Well, okay, I'm going to ask
one. Don't steal his bit.
Is this like an all-family event, or is this something like...
This is a very PG event.
It is.
There won't be anything explicit. I mean, it's actually going to stay true to the black and white nature of the original content.
Yeah,
it is a black and white live production, and it is going.
So will the lighting be kind of make it look almost black and white? You know how you can make lighting dampen.
No. It's not going to be like the lighting will have an effect on the contrast, but everything, or the clothing, the color, it will all be black and white.
Right,
oh,
okay.
Really?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
With highly contrasting, like very visually stunning, even though it's black and white.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very cool.
And
I
it's
didn't
a
know
very
that.
Audience. Interactive thing. It,
so will,
well,
like,
I'm not
will
gonna...
people throw toast up at the audience?
It's not Rocky Horror.
No.
Okay.
It's
not. So... Not. It's not audience participation.
I don't want to give
people out of the audience to be a zombie. No.
No. We won't have anyone that is not part of the cast becoming
right.
involved in anything major.
Right.
But I will say this is live theater, and to stay true to what the sort of zombie culture, like the Evil Dead, the musical, there will be an interaction element. But it won't be that you're forced to come up and sing and dance with the cast or anything like
right,
that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing.
Now, okay,
right.
So now in Evil Dead, the musical, it was a lot of blood being splurted out and all that kind of stuff. So this is not, we're not going to have
There
that.
Was a splatter zone, I believe they called it. And if you're in a select seating area, you were...
Like wear a trench coat kind of thing, or wear a raincoat, basically.
It's like
going
to Greenland, Chris, and sitting near the whale.
Yeah, hand in hand with the PG content. You are safe no matter where you seat in the theater. And it is a very actually cool theater. It's at the Passmurai Theater. We actually locked that down very recently.
That's in the core. That's downtown Toronto,
yes, that is,
right?
That is a very busy. It's on Ryerson. So it's actually in a very happening spot, you know. Mm-hmm. So lots of foot traffic, lots of easy access, parking, everything like that. So hopefully as many people can come as needs to.
Did we ask when is this due for release yet? Or?
No, you haven't.
When is it due for release?
Oh, well, since you asked. Right. That we're looking at mid-April, and we're running through until about mid-May.
Because mid-April is a great kind of scary Halloween-y type of month, right?
Okay, absolutely.
That's my next question. So... mid-April, Easter, you know, I don't. Is there a reason for it?
There's
going to
be
Christmas
no zombie
April?
Jesus. Chris isn't getting no pulse. Zombie Jesus. Okay. No.
Zombie Jesus. You know, no. Jesus rose from the grave. You know, zombies are rising from the grave. I mean, I'm not trying to be disrespectful here, but is there supposed to be a tie-in or something here?
No, it just so happens that that was an ideal time, and also we want it to be just in the sort of the. I don't know, the pinnacle or the peak approaching into spring because
we actually have a tourist season, right?
We have a lot of outside We have a lot of outside dressings and we want it to be very interactive right from when you even come to the curbside. You know, we want to be displaying like a not like a haunted mansion sort of thing, but we want to have it all done up. We want it to be an experience while waiting in line, you know, and then on.
Okay. My next question is zombies like to eat brains, correct?
Some of them do. I'm not going
to
get into super technical,
I have to wear a helmet if I come to see your play?
No battle armor required. If you want to wear it and, you know, have, like, your zombie apocalypse handbook in hand or in pocket just in case and have your best pair of sneakers or runners on
now,
just in case you need to flee, then sure, go right ahead.
Now, my good friend Glenn Kay just wrote a book about, or sorry, a second edition of zombie movies coming out. Is this something that, you know... Yeah, should he be reviewing this as part of his, you know, zombie fest? Is there going to be any movies involved, or what's going on with that?
Okay, interesting. I'm going to branch off. No, he doesn't particularly need to. Anyone who wants to cover content or talk to us and get a little bit of a scoop on everything, that's absolutely, you know, we're gonna encourage that.
But weren't you telling me earlier that there's going to be some sort of movie played in the background of this or something like that?
Chris, I don't know what you're doing. You're giving away these dirty... What's going to happen is actually somewhere down the road, we are actually taking a little road trip to Pittsburgh where all the original everything happened.
Oh,
and we are actually going to...
Monroeville.
We are going to, there you go, Chris. We're going to involve some authentic elements of the Pittsburgh locations. And so we're not doing this, you know, haphazardly. We are.
Nobody said you were. I'm just,
full force, Chris.
Yeah.
Now, there is obviously, this is a large production.
Yes.
Obviously, you guys have put some finance things into place as well. You were telling me earlier you're going on the – what's the website called where you're raising
money? Okay, yes. This is a good point. Indiegogo is where we're going right now. We have our fundraising campaign open until Halloween midnight. So October 31st, midnight.
Right.
And so that you can actually go to directly just on www.indiegogo.com/ NOTLDL, Night of the Living Dead Live.
Right.
Or, well, you know, I guess we might as well say it now since we didn't before. NightOfTheLivingDeadLive.com. And it's actually on the front page. You can click on the Indiegogo and everything.
And this is to raise funds and make sure
it is
this
because,
gets done.
I mean, you know, I'm on as executive producer, but it's not like it's Jerry Bruckheimer's film sort of thing.
Right.
It's all fanboys coming together, pitching in. You know, us, it's more of we're a production team. We're going to get things done. We're talking. You know, we're getting our playbills all done up, graphic design, website, stuff like that. But we do definitely need a little bit of help funding just to make sure that we can do this, like, Pittsburgh trip.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be drinking money. Don't get me wrong here, okay?
Right.
But we actually want to incorporate so many authentic elements and really true set pieces and designs, you know, that, you know what, anything that people want to donate. And, I mean, a lot of small documentaries and under-budgeted films, they do this all the time just to get that little boost to get to make sure that they have
put you
some
over the top to
some,
make it
exactly.
done right.
Yeah. We want to make sure that when you come to see the play that it's very authentic and that you leave fulfilled.
Now, are you hoping now – obviously, you're going to draw off of zombie fanboys and everything.
Yes.
But do you think, I mean, from what you've seen before, will non-zombie, non-comic, will they be entertained?
Absolutely,
by this?
Because like I said, Christopher Bunt, he's got a lot of humor stored up in that man, and he has a couple of the other writers. They're actually Second City veterans, and so they're going to be a lot. Trust me, looking through the script, I was laughing out loud. I don't do that a lot. You know, I'm a very stern person, if you couldn't tell. It will be very humorous and engaging, and you don't have to be a zombie lover.
Right. Now, you got a couple things coming up where you're doing appearances.
That's right. And you know what? Just the big ones in the next little bit. We're going to the Toronto Zombie Walk on October 20th. That's going to be a huge deal. We have Russ Schreiner and John Rousseau as the grand marshals of the event.
Cool.
About 10,000 people are expected to come. We will have a vendor ship booth. We're going to have a moan zone where you can come and get your own moans recorded. We're going to use it for a little bit of an aspect, a secret aspect our play as
nice.
Well.
Oh, but, very nice.
And we will have an award for the best moaner of the show and everything. And
I was going to say something, yeah. Chris.
Also,
I was going to say something.
We both looked at each other like, now's the perfect time to chime
also,
in.
But we shouldn't.
Yeah. Yes, with our Indiegogo, we'll have on the site Indiegogo. If you wanted to donate to the campaign, you don't want to go online, use your credit card. Some people are against that. Do that on site. And we're also giving bonus perks and free incentives like t-shirts and stuff for a reduced donation rate so that it's just thanks for being here in person sort of thing. Then, after the Zombie Walk, we do have a very big event, Walter. I don't know if you're aware, but we are actually coming to the Big B Comics. Is that – I don't know if that's a place you know
Marty,
of.
No, you know what? I'm always the last to hear of these events, but they did tell me about it. The girls told me about the big
nice –
what is that? Saturday the 27th.
Saturday
right?
The following Saturday.
Who's
so
coming to that?
Right before Halloween. Yeah. So we're going to have our production team. There's going to be myself, Chris, Phil. I think there are going to be a couple zombie-related guests. There's going to be probably 5 to 10 to a dozen, maybe zombies actually dressed up, ghouling around, and just, you know.
Cool.
I would love to make it an event that you and your store can remember. We're going to absolutely deck it out. Free giveaways, raffles. We're going to raffle off copies of films, scripts. There's a limited edition script of the Anubis, which is the original working title. And it's going to be signed by George Romero, John Rousseau, Russ Schreiner. We're doing that, plus, like I said, t-shirt giveaways, flyers, posters.
Awesome. Fun.
Mm-hmm, just for coming in. And also on-site, Indiegogo. And if you, again, donate on-site, there's going to be bonuses to that.
Perfect.
Then, you know what? Those are the only two right now, because that's Halloween. It's kind of a big season.
Right.
Future down the road, we're going to get involved in Fangoria's Halloween party.
Oh, nice.
And then also, sorry, Walter, and Big B Comics, but... The Silver Snail in Toronto, you know, won comic store of the year this year. I know you weren't eligible this year, so that's okay.
Right on. No, hey, listen, well-deserved. George and the gang, well-deserved. And he was telling me about you guys coming down.
We are doing a George A. Romero in-store appearance, and this is going to be slated for first or second week of December.
Beautiful.
Nice.
Just holiday season. He's going to be signings, doing stuff. I don't even know. I know the Snail moved to a little – it's a kind of sizable location, but I don't even know if they can handle the traffic. Like, I don't want to explode people through the walls or anything
like
that, but I hope it happens. I hope it happens.
You know what? Excellent. You know what that means? Maybe you're going to have to get George Romero at Big B.
Yeah, we will have to get George Romero here at Big B and
I can
here
work on
Comic Culture, all right?
And on Comic Culture.
And Marty's our man on the inside.
Yes,
Chris.
Absolutely.
I don't want him to supersede my guest
experience. Well, you know,
I'm sure
it'll happen just by fluke.
All right, Chris –
All right, well, let's keep on going here today. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today.
All right. Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by the kid Andrew Roebuck.
Young
Andrew Roebuck, who does a great job. For comments and suggestions, visit comicbookdaily.com. Click on the podcast link. Scroll down to the comments field and click then you type your comments in, I guess. Also, hear us on comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com.
Yes, and remember, children of the night make music, but they should probably be in bed.
Right on. Listen, thanks to Marty Berthelmer for coming in today. And
thanks
please go out and support your local comic book shop.
And have yourself a great day.